Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
Ich bin Simon.
And I'm Tom.
Das ist Deutsch, Simon.
Ja.
Ja. Ja.
Oh ja.
Oh ja.
Guten Abend, Wayne. Wie geht's?
Guten Abend. Wie geht's? Gut, danke. We're just nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. So Simon, are you ready?
Yes, mate.
Tom, are you ready?
Absolutely.
Good, I'm ready. And if you guys at home are ready, we've just about recovered in time to give you all of the news, views, gossip, and purchases from our very first visit to Essenspiel in 2022. So sit back, relax, and listen as we bring you the latest from Germany in this week's episode. This week, we're talking about our trip to Spiel. This time last week, we were in Germany for the mother of all board game expos, the International Spieltag 2022. We spoke to some publishers, some designers, and have a heap of news from the event, which we're very excited to share with you. And alongside that, we're going to talk about the best things that we saw, and also the stuff that basically convinced us to part with our hard-earned money. But before we get to that sort of stuff, and there is a ton that we're going to have to try and plow through in this week's episode, Simon, Tom, what are your overall impressions of Essenspiel after the event, after you've digested it? Did it meet, exceed, or not hit your expectations prior to going?
It is sehr, sehr, sehr groß.
Sehr groß.
It is incredibly large. So much bigger than I really could have comprehended at the time. To the point where I know I've not seen things.
It's entirely possible.
100% missed stuff or haven't got back to stuff that I wanted to see, caught a glimpse, and then just never found it again. So, yeah, I suppose even with an expectation of it being enormous, I was still somewhat overwhelmed.
Yeah.
It's definitely the biggest sort of, not just board games expo, it's probably like the biggest expo of any sort of description that I've been to. It was fantastic, though. Yeah, absolutely exceeded expectations.
I'd say
I'm still processing.
Yeah, it definitely exceeded mine. I watched a couple of, I suppose, Spiel roundup videos on YouTube post the fact.
Yeah,
and there was a ton of stuff. I was like, was that? Wait, that was there? I never saw that. Loads of stuff that I just didn't even notice.
Even trying to be thorough, it was so easy to just miss, you know, little pockets of halls that you just never went into.
Yeah, just it's so vast. Absolutely. It certainly exceeded my expectations, for sure. Is there anything about the event that surprised you, Simon?
We discussed on the way back, there were no general open play tables.
Yeah, that was surprising, for sure.
In comparison to UKG, where there's literally an entire hall, there was just nothing of the ilk. There's plenty to sit down and play, but it was that game that was on show.
Yeah, it was sort of strange. It was sort of like a combination of not having anywhere to sit down and play your purchases at the venue and not really having anywhere to sit down unless you were at a table to play one of the show games.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people having what I deem a concrete picnic, literally sitting on the floor in the bit between the galleria and the halls where you were less likely to get trod on. But
considering it's sort of a 3-4 day event and it runs for what, 8-9 hours a day, plus 10 hours a day, it's a lot of standing up and walking around with relatively little in the way of sort of amenities.
100%
surprise.
That was very surprising, the lack of sort of free seating and free play areas, for sure. I mean, arguably you could spend 8 hours of each of those 3 days just walking, and you would not get bored. But at the same time, you have to sit at some point. I mean, it's inevitable. But that was quite surprising, for sure.
I don't know if surprising is the right word, but there were relative lack, or my only comparison is UKG this year. Relative lack of general retailers versus publisher-specific or developer-specific stands. UKG felt like there was, maybe not 50-50, but there was like a bunch of big retail houses there selling a gamut of stuff.
It's the difference between a show that is there for people to launch and show off new games where you're going to have a lot more publishers and developers versus something that is probably more of a retail experience.
Yeah, more of a general celebration. I mean, yeah, not much gets launched at UKG, I'd have thought, but certainly no, things by get comparison. Launched at Spiel.
Yeah. 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 So, as I say, it's not necessarily a surprise other than my lack of knowledge.
Well, it is,
prior
a,
to going,
it is a surprise
so,
for you, yeah, absolutely, yeah, in comparison. I think that is right. I think if you were German, you're in more luck because there were big German retailers there that had a lot of games in German, which obviously you walk right past when you're English because you're like, well, what's the point?
Yeah, yeah, you're tempted to look at everything as you go past and go, yeah, they're almost certainly not getting English games there. I mean, yeah, Pegasus Spieler, as we know, was the daddy of Hall 3.
Yes.
And they have all their German translation versions of games that are released elsewhere in the world under their different licenses. Pegasus Spiel translate them, as we know, having spoken to Chris at UKGE. So they had all their versions there, and that was probably the biggest individual retailer, I think. That them and
yeah,
Asmodee, who had
yeah,
two separate retail booths, effectively.
Mm.
Almost like mini shops with an in and an out that you
yeah,
had to queue for.
Mm-hmm. But entirely fair. All right, let's dive straight in because there's a whole heap. First, we'll start with, I guess, the interviews, news and views. And then we'll go through and talk about our impressions of the games that we've managed to play. And then we'll talk about any purchases that we made. And then there'll be a little bit of a roundup stuff at the end there. So let's try and dig in as best as we can without letting this thing drag on for 3 hours. all right. So general news and views. We talked a little bit about the size and scale of the place. It was six large expo center halls, essentially.
Yeah, I've had trouble this week trying to describe quite how large it was to people with no experience.
Yeah,
the best conversion I could come up with, because again, you could say, oh, UKGE, but if you haven't been to
UKG, you don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So my nearest comparison was Alexandra Palace, the main hall there where okay, I've seen the gig. Like, it's at least six of those.
Yeah,
which again, if you've not been there, is a redundant comparison. We think we're talking multiple football pitches,
yeah,
which seems to be a common allegory for size of things.
Oh yeah, many football pitches worth of space. Yeah, the scale is enormous, absolutely ridiculous. There was quite a few delivery problems this year and low stocks of some games.
Yeah, again, not really a surprise. I don't think
we knew
that there was going to be lots of shipping problems and. Spiel being such a big event and being one of the main events of the year for people launching games in a time where shipping issues are still very much a reality for a lot of publishers and distributors, it wasn't a huge surprise to then see that many of them had limited stock.
Yeah.
I think quite a few of the places that we spoke to people, they'd said that they'd had limited stock in and they'd had to sort of air freight certain stuff in order to get it in time, or it was stuck in customs.
Yeah, certainly
physically stuck in customs while the show was going on.
US publishers, Pandasaurus particularly, we spoke to, said they had stuff stuck in customs, so it was down the road almost, but couldn't get it out in time.
No.
There's no way they could have literally shipped it, so air freight was the option, and even then, still
bloody expensive as well. They're doing it so
incredibly so. Yeah, they kind of question how much profit margin there is, if any at all, for that is. Just there for promotion, and it works. You know, they'd sold out of everything they had in their stand by the end of the show, if not before the end of the show.
I do wonder if the Brexit challenges made any difference for the US publishers, who I imagine might have stopped off in the UK and then shipped stuff across.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe
it would be interesting to know. But yeah, it was in definitely the US publishers that had problems with stock.
I don't think it's just that. It's you know, to be blunt about it, so many of the distributors will be probably relying on stuff coming in from China.
Yeah, as well.
And
that's the other side of it.
Yeah, you've got hugely inflated shipping container costs.
Just
you've
costs,
got
prices,
ship
delays.
Issues. You've
yeah,
got
yeah,
disruption in Eastern Europe and yeah, you know, all sorts of maybe overland routes that might have existed before that are not available now.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
could have been all of that.
Not hugely surprising to see that there are issues, but it's a bit of a shame to then see that, you know, some of the
games that
the,
you really want are
gone. Yeah, some of the places suffer. Some of the publishers are suffering because they couldn't get stock in, and then there's obviously the knock on effect that people
don't get what
to
they want.
Get their hands on the stuff,
yeah, which we'll talk about later.
Mm. Then again, though, some of them were so new, as we said, so many games launching.
Yeah. Mm.
That everything that had been made so far was there.
Yeah.
They'd only been making them for a week.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I think it was Peter Hofgaard said that they finished production the Friday prior to the show.
A week before the show.
Yeah.
So it was off the production line into a van and
straight to the show.
Into Germany.
It's amazing, isn't it? There are lots and lots of games launched. But also what was surprising to me was launched well in advance of general release.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like months in advance.
Yeah.
Because that's the jump that they have to make, right? They need to be there for this event.
Yeah.
Yeah, things I've looked at, found were out of stock and thought, I'll get it when it comes out on retail. Oh, there's no release date yet.
Yeah, literally.
A vague Q4, maybe.
Or, 2023, or literally 6 months or more in many cases. Yeah. And so,
you know, that's their rush stock, the stuff that they've managed to make so far that they've managed to get
first
to
print
the show,
stuff,
and then the rest of it, they just have to wait until there's another delivery again.
I've never felt so at the cutting edge of release of
games. Right?
It's really odd to have seen so many things, including one game that doesn't actually exist yet.
We can't tell
you anything.
Yeah. Well, turns out we can, and I'll tell you for why later.
Uh-huh.
Yes. There's not just that, but there's so many games that were, you know, you turn up, you sit down, you play a game, and then halfway through someone says, oh, this is their prototype copy.
Mm.
And actually... Yeah. They have currently no schedule for when it's going to be available for release whatsoever, or it's about to go to Kickstarter.
Just a vague idea.
It'll be available. Kickstarter opens next year, so it'll be 18 months, 24 months, God knows how long for some of them.
Yeah, it's certainly a reason to go if you're into board gaming. You will get to play everything, like the earliest possible opportunity to play this stuff.
I mean, well, and it's an unrivaled opportunity to play stuff before you buy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Sometimes so far before you buy that you might have forgotten that it existed by the time it comes out.
The German publishers naturally had a humongous presence. We saw in Hall 3, Cosmos and Pegasus took up basically the entirety of that hall.
Probably about half of that hall, and it's the biggest hall.
It's the biggest, it's the mega hall, the Uber hall, I guess you'd call it.
So large.
So large.
It took me 30 seconds probably to full on run late on Sunday, which is like half the hall.
Yeah.
Okay. With no one in my way at a full sprint, it took me 30 seconds. And that's not much of a thing, I suppose, but...
Gives... Long. 30 seconds to a minute is a long time in one direction. Yeah, it's crazy. And then, I suppose, by contrast, some of the giant US-based publishers had a very small presence. Mm. And in fact, another small presence was actually a European publisher. So the two examples I'm thinking of is Simon.
Yep.
I almost missed them.
Which were essentially just a token sort of presence.
They had two games set up. One of them was in German. And it was just, they were really, really weird. And they had some games for sale, German editions. But it was very small presence for what I was expecting, right? I was expecting bigger. When I'm looking at Asmodee, mm-hmm. and their, or Days of Wonder, or Days of Wonder from Asmodee,
yep.
which had a giant presence there. Even Pandasaurus had a significant presence there. Simon's was quite disappointingly small.
Do you think that's telling of Simon's general approach to their games?
It might be their general...
Largely Kickstarter-driven, unless you can tell me otherwise.
Even more FOMO than normal.
Yeah, just like, you know...
You can only get it through Kickstarter. Yeah, we're not even going to come to the shows.
We're not even turning up at Spiel. Yeah, maybe. And I was also very surprised... Yeah, that's a good point, Simon. I was very... That might tell us something about why Awakened Realms wasn't really there.
Yeah, they were kind of clustered in with the GameFound booth, weren't
they? I think
they?
That's their company.
Okay.
Right, so...
Oh, so they're one and the same?
They
almost.
Are, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's the case. Someone on the internet will tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure they own GameFound. Or GameFound was the thing that they set up in order to manage their pledges originally.
Yeah.
And then they just turned into a
distribution.
That
might make more sense then.
It was still small.
We want to crowdfund and not use Kickstarter. Oh, well, we better make a... crowdfunding platform.
We'll make our own. Yeah, they had a little... it was like a little display case that showed off some of the deliveries that they were planning.
While we're on them then, Tainted Grail, I'm going to throw in here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's currently sat at $3.3 million on their latest Kickstarter. That's 6 days to go.
It's huge. It was, again, I think I said it on the preview, it was the second highest funded game of 2019.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, the highest funded game. The highest funded by a distance. So this is going to be much the same, I think, this year.
I'd be interested to see where it ends, because there'll be late pledges and all sorts of additional stuff that gets sort of piled on towards the back end. But I'm curious to see where they officially close the initial campaign, because it's bonkers at the moment, but it's not by any means the largest Kickstarter campaign ever. We had we went past EA Star, who are one of the manufacturers, I think, that work with Awakened Realms.
Right.
I think they manufactured, for example, ISS Vanguard.
Yeah, okay.
And they had a big poster of all the stuff, all the companies that they've worked with, and I think Vanguard was up there as one of the top ones.
I think I saw that, yeah.
It was like $8 million or something like that.
Yeah, just a little segue on that. It's important to know that this is a... it's a big industry event, and so there are loads of manufacturers there.
Masses of.
Displaying what they can do for you if you are a
fulfillment partners. Yeah. And this is the quality of produce we've done for you previously. Yeah.
Here's pictures of our factory floor and all the milling machines and everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've worked on this game and that game and the other. Yeah,
lots
so.
Of business meetings going on, which is interesting to see. Again, not something that we particularly... although I'm sure it happened at UKG. Not something we saw particularly.
No, but this would look...
there were definitely fewer. There were some, but there were a lot fewer fulfillment partners at UKG.
Yeah, obviously GameQuest
was there as well. They were there as well. Before we get into the, I suppose, publisher or interview-specific news and views, anything else that you want to mention on general... stuff from the event?
I saw an attendance figure earlier.
Oh, let us know.
Apparently they do this on people through the door on any given day added together, so we would have counted three times.
Oh, so we would be, 12 people, I guess?
Total visitors. I think UKG did the same thing. They counted unique visitors and total...
UKG did two separate tickets. They're two separate. Anyway.
The number was 147,000.
That's big.
So even if you cut that by, 40% for people only going on a day...
Yeah, 100,000.
Still manic.
Well, smaller than pre-COVID, but unsurprising.
Yeah, I think they topped out at 209,000 in 2019.
That's correct, which was their biggest ever. So we'll see what next year looks like. But also,
I feel like I've walked past 100,000 people.
Yeah, tell me about it. It really did. All right, let's talk about some of the people that we spoke to. Let's start with Rebellion Unplugged, and we'll... talk about our impressions of Joyride a little bit later, but the news from Rebellion Unplugged is Joyride. Tell us about that.
I'm so hyped for this game.
Yeah.
It was really good fun.
This is our only, as far as we know, their only copy in pre-production, pre-Kickstarter. It's a destruction derby race game.
Yeah.
The big hex map. Everything's variable in terms of where you put the gates. You basically have to go through three gates per lap.
Yeah.
You can go through them in any direction. So if you happen to swing around backwards and come charging at your opponents, you very much can do and are encouraged to do so. Duncan, the head designer and owner of Rebellion itself, he said in his mind it was Mad Max meets Mario Kart with a good dash of Hot Wheels.
Yep.
And that is a perfect description.
Do you know, there was a game I was thinking of, an old computer game that I couldn't remember until right now when I've done a bit of a Google. Carmageddon. Anyone remember that?
Yeah. Oh, boy, do I.
Yeah. Kind of a little bit of that.
Yes.
A little bit of that, for sure. Yeah.
Or Twisted Metal.
Twisted Metal,
Or Vigilante 8.
Vigilante 8 was so good.
Yeah. But definitely Twisted Metal. Yeah. But yeah, we spoke to those guys. This looks brilliant. I don't know, should we talk about the impressions now? As We're right here.
Yeah.
We liked
Joyride.
It was freaking great.
Yeah.
What can I say? I think Duncan pitched it as a racing game with player interaction. With heaps of it.
As much player interaction as possible.
Yeah, because typically there isn't as much as you'd like, and this has all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, unlike other things like maybe Downforce, where you're just trying to get out ahead and peg it, this is, can I pit this opponent so they're facing the wrong way around before the start of their next turn.
The number of times people got spun round, so they were facing the wrong direction.
I think we all got 180 at least once, in which case you then just reverse over the line and go the other way.
There was definitely one round, I think it was Ant who managed to spin both of you with one move.
Through. It was brilliant.
And I think there were probably at least four or five instances where you find yourself trying to get to the next checkpoint and driving head on towards someone else.
Yeah, and who doesn't want to do that?
It was great.
You've got missiles and oil slicks you can drop.
All of that stuff.
Different player power-ups, single-use handbrake turns and nitrous.
Yeah, it has a really smart little dice system as well.
Yeah, it was an interesting split between dice that you lock, that you know what you're going to move, and randomized dice.
Yes.
I want to go faster. Yeah. Oh, not that fast.
Not that fast. Okay. The art looked actually brilliant, even though this was a prototype. On the other side, which they showed us as a sneaky preview, looked freaking great.
Oh, it was the
crazy
the
zoo.
Funky zoo.
Yeah, the Pandan Zoo, which they said they were thinking about putting like mutated animals into and fences and stuff.
Which sounds hilarious.
And they designed the car pieces to be Hot Wheel size. So they quite literally made them toy car size on purpose, which I think is a really good shout.
But coming to Kickstarter, Q1, probably March.
Yeah, it sounded like they'd got good price point in mind, a good degree of variability. Was it that one that had a second play board as well?
A smaller board for two-player.
Potentially up to four different maps to race around.
Although they were talking also about, I think as we were playing it, it was everyone had the same abilities, but they were talking about having lots of asymmetrical car loadouts and individual powers for different cars.
Definitely see that being a thing that would work. A bit like with Steel Colosseum that we saw with Zatu, just having a slight tweak to your character ability.
That's right. At the demo, we had just symmetrical powers, but they were in the box, there will be asymmetrical powers that you can have for each car, which sounds great. Yeah. Absolutely.
They also had their Judge Dredd game, which is due out this week, next week, very soon.
AP, if not already, by the time you hear it.
Fantastic.
It really does, yeah.
I know nothing about the original game. This is a slight tweak to make it less twatty,
apparently. They've tweaked out a lot of the 70s board game sort of
design tropes. There's some really horrible guff cards and stuff.
You draw a card, you die, go and sit in the corner for 3 hours. That
sort of
stuff. They removed a lot of that and made it more fair and fun.
Sounds good. Yeah. So, 2000 AD fans, keep an eye out for that.
Mm.
Our video interview with Pete and Duncan is up on our Facebook and YouTube.
That's right, it will be, yep. So, if you go visit that, you'll find it. Two very nice guys. Thank you, gents, for talking to us.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to... I haven't got this in any particular order on my thing, so...
I wrote everyone I could think of in the order I thought of them.
Oh, well, the next one here is Pandasaurus. So, we spoke to Pandasaurus. Raina, again, absolutely lovely. Thank you for speaking to us. And they went through a few things. They were pushing quite a few games, I think.
So many to choose from.
And I think none of them were available by the time we were talking to them.
No.
They were completely cleared out.
Good luck buying
them. Which is great for them.
Absolutely.
Not so great for the people who missed out.
No, if you want to play a game, tough. Yeah. But Natropar was the first one they talked about, which was kind of a push-your-luck bag-pulling game.
Drawing little plastic, like Dorito chips.
That's right.
From a bag. It's like a little party game, but it's packaged like a packet of Doritos.
It really does look like a pile of
pieces are a pile of Doritos, basically. Yeah.
I think that'll do really well.
It looked like a fun little party game, really quick and easy to play.
And then they had their big smash hit for the whole weekend, which was The Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it looks so good.
It looks freaking good. You got the chance to play test it. Tell us about it, Simon.
A 3-round play. So limited experience, but it was enough to confirm the fact that I was disappointed it had sold out and I didn't have a copy in my hands. So I'm going to pre-order that through the shop next time I go in. It's due out potentially in the next couple of weeks, but as we know and we've already covered, shipping issues will be a factor.
Getting into the UK will be a problem,
hopefully by the end of the year at the latest. It's an area control game. You're looking to assert area control and dominance over your opponent teams and wild wolves. And you do that by flipping a number of tokens which are double-sided on your player board. So there's 6. And you need to flip over a certain number to do certain actions. Yeah, so that's
like
your action selection.
Matching tile colours, right?
That's it, yeah. So you'll always have one of your own base colour. And then each side of the other 5 will have one or two different things. So if you want to do an action in the tundra and it needs 2 tiles flipped over, you need to make sure you've got 2 tundra tiles to flip over. Some of them, the highest one is a dominance move. You need 3 of the same. So you need to set up your previous actions to then have the available tiles for your next turn to flip all 3 or more over to carry out. Just in the very short 5 to 10 minute gameplay I had, I was sold.
Yeah.
It looks great. I think.
The table presence is staggering. It looks really amazing.
Yeah, a bit of a variable setup in there. The tiles all fit together really nicely. I think it's just going to... If they'd had another 500 copies, they'd have sold out of those, I reckon.
Probably. While you were doing that, me and Tom got to play the Fox Experiment,
the latest from Elizabeth Hargrave.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yes. Oh, and not even the final version. This was still a prototype, technically. But
we played high speed Fox Experiment with a German guy.
With a German man who is a very nice man. Can't remember his name. Lovely guy. But that is really smart and not what I thought it would be, frankly.
I didn't know what to expect. Once we got started and you saw how the engine worked, I was like, okay, this bears some resemblance to some of the sort of like the design choices in Wingspan.
Brilliant game, loads of dice chucking, and who doesn't love chucking loads of dice?
Masses of dice.
I hadn't realised quite how many dice, so I went off after I'd finished my wolves thing and I came back and you guys were just finishing off.
Dice pool building.
Yeah, building dice pools,
combined with
engine building. Yes. Really, really smart. And obviously you're breeding fox pups, which you're then going to put in the middle, which other people can then take to become more parents.
Really interesting. You start with some pre-printed parents as your first generation, and every time you breed a new generation of foxes, those foxes become the pool of foxes that people pick from for the next round.
That's really clever. So and you're trying to get to a more domesticated lineage.
That's right. Yes. So you can sort of like you can guide the breeding of your foxes, and ultimately it boils down to four different colours of dice.
That's basically
but you guide your sort of lineage of foxes to try and get the right combinations
certain
of colours.
Certain traits is what you're after, because there'll be, I suppose, science objectives that you're trying to meet, which will look for certain traits that you're trying to get, and if you can meet those, you'll get loads of points at the end of the game. Very cool. Really unusual theme. Production looks beautiful anyway. Really great. Yeah. Lots of, I mean, it had a little bit of a roll and write thing going on as well.
Yeah, when you breed your pup, you literally write down all of the dice that they then generate for the next generation. You give them a name and everything. They're all wipe clean.
I saw Wayne the Fox on this.
Yeah, Wayne the Fox. Absolutely.
Wayne was one of the fox pups that I bred, I think. Yeah.
He was a stud as well.
Yeah. he was an absolute beast.
Absolute stud. So,
potential late pledge then for you, Wayne?
Maybe actually.
Kickstarter just finished.
It's freaking good. I mean, we had a blast with it.
We really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was really good.
We also smashed through a game of Wild Style, which is a manic card draw game.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. And again, if they'd had it in stock, I'd have probably picked up.
Wildstyle was awesome. It has this graffiti skate punk theme. And I've not seen simultaneous card drafting.
It was
drafting
real time trick taking.
Kind
basically.
Of trick making, I guess. Making your own tricks.
You're just trying to get a
set building.
A matching set of three means you can lay a token on that set of things. So either trains or schoolyard or whatever else. The city map, very, very reminiscent of the Skate Summer layout. Yeah. So I think they've almost been designed to kind of cooperate with each other, not in gameplay, but...
At least visually similar.
I can see that being a bundle when stocks are available.
Yeah, absolutely. But that was super fun.
Yeah, and but, Skate Summer was also present. My version still hasn't arrived, but is due any day now, so...
Yeah, Bandsaur is knocking it out of the park, I think. We'll talk about who maybe won Spiel a little bit later on.
Yeah.
I won Spiel. we were all winners, but they did a cracking job. We spoke to Rainer as well about just their general success and why their stuff is so aesthetically pleasing. They do have
a shared art vision. Right?
Yeah, they do have a specific vision which they try and adhere everything to, and they're doing it, and it's great. I was surprised by something she said about they consider themselves to be like a family plus type publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch that during the interview? Which surprises me, because I feel like it's more than that. Like Wildstyle is more than that.
Some of them are definitely...
Fox Experiment feels like more than that for sure. That's more than family plus. It's a light mid. Maybe
It was definitely a comfortable mid, yeah.
Yeah, but it certainly wasn't. I wouldn't call that family plus. No. I mean, if you think about... Was it that Pegasuspiel... They called Living Forest Family Plus. I think that's probably slightly less complex.
Yeah, and that was definitely less complex.
So just a thought. It was just an interesting comment.
Mm.
So, should we talk about Dark Omen?
Yeah.
Those guys were great. They were possibly the most enthusiastic group we met.
Yeah.
The most enthusiastic two gentlemen. absolutely lovely guys.
Yeah.
So that's Errol and Lucas, and the rest of their team are there. So the art designer and one of the other writers was there as well. But yeah, Errol and Lucas running us through this epic looking board game.
It was a monster.
We walked past it and went, really, what was, the bloody hell is that?
this was mid to late on Sunday, so we'd already seen a billion
bunch of
things
stuff, yeah.
And this was something that was a standout that we all had to go and look at.
Yes.
And it went from, hey, do you want us to tell you a little bit about it, to full-blown interview.
Yeah, 10-minute interview, yeah, which you can find on our page. Yeah, fascinating. It's this giant modular wheeled central board.
Yeah. So if we say it's a
encapsulate this
dungeon
game.
Crawler with role-playing elements.
There you
you would say, okay, there are about 200,000 of those out there, except it's not on a board, it's on a sort of like a big circular
disc dais yeah,
that rotates. And when you rotate it, the layout of the maze or dungeon changes.
Mm.
Which was super clever.
Really fascinating.
Yeah, and you can layer it up. So there was like a separate inner dial that you would be like a fixed part of the dungeon. And then you could lay tiles.
Locations around it.
On top of it. So you could take what was essentially just like a spinning dial with moving lines and turn it into towns or dungeons or forests.
Yeah.
By sort of building on top of it. And they sort of build it as like the console for the RPG that they could then easily give you extra modules or plugins for a later
date. Other adventures.
Yeah,
and
just install paper-based add-ons, so more missions, more character cards, more all kinds of updates to it with, but this investment in this grand console of a game board.
It had some gorgeous player, so I suppose they were sort of like player boards.
The cards looked lovely, like the player boards were double thickness.
They were like double thickness, and then they had like a third layer thickness at the back that was essentially like a card rail to hold your hand of cards
standing,
which was really cool.
Really great. I liked that the dice, inverted commas, they had were like runes, like bones.
Yes.
You did roll the runes.
That was cool as...
They were like barrel dice, right?
That was cool as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that. If that felt like... When I saw that, that's such a nice thematic addition. That's like chucking the runes and seeing what pops
up. Yeah, and the runes that came out determine what cards you then pulled to have a limited deck of cards to play over your next few rounds, which is a great idea. And they were talking about maybe having that board be a flippable...
Yeah, to have an upside down kind of thing. Yeah.
It was also jigsaw pieced.
That's
so
right.
I think it was broken up into four quadrants. So you could have... Yeah, it could be double-sided, or you could change out a quadrant with something else.
Yes.
Really clever idea as a mechanical basis for the game.
Again, Kickstarter coming...
April Q2. April's what they told us.
Q2. Yeah. Okay. So,
15 quests in the base game.
Nice.
It is a high input to get into the game. They said it's probably going to be somewhere between 170, 180 euro.
Yeah. £150 ish, give or take.
When you compare that to the current or recent Simon or Tainted Grail type things of a similar ilk, they're easily 120, 130.
So it's not far off.
It's
that
not
premium level board game investment.
No, but I'll be honest with you, I really like the idea of something that is not a board, but it's essentially a board, rather than what is quite common with Simon and a lot of other Kickstarter dungeon crawl games these days, where they give you a big pile of tiles.
Yes.
And then they're all in a bag or in a box, and you have to sift through them every time and try and work out what goes where. Whereas this is always going to be sort of like the same framework under your game, and you just have sort of small points of interest that you just sort of plonk on top of it, which is really
that grand focal point, I think, will stand out on any table.
Oh, it's
table
a real visual spectacle.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, all of us had to look at it. So, and thank you, chaps. Really lovely guys. We spoke to Peter Hoffman.
No, we didn't. Wait. Hofgaard. Well, you may have.
Hofgaard.
But we definitely spoke to Peter B. Hofgaard.
Peter B. Hofgaard. Philip K. Dick.
We got it wrong every single time.
Every time. I'm sorry, Peter, Philip, David, Jesus. Hofgaard. We talked about his first game, which was Starship Captains.
Which Simon managed to collar him out of the crowd.
That's
he was
right.
Just going about his
talk
business.
To us.
I was ingracious enough to just holler his name at him, and yeah. he was incredibly gracious enough to come over and
Philip
say,
"Philip K. Dick, yeah. over here.
Philip K. Dick, come, talk to us about Blade Runner." You inspired it and everything. Anyway, for a first-time designer, what an achievement.
Incredible.
Let's just start with that, and let's also talk about our playtest of Starship Captains.
Spoilers for our Wii Played episode, doesn't when that happens.
Yes, but
it's amazing.
Just in brief, at least. what a brilliant game. Just
the double thickness, definitely not Enterprise player board.
Yes.
Is just so clever. The rotation of your crew, your workers.
Yeah, your crew.
Your sort of like worker, available worker pool. And how that changes over time, and how the different sort of departments work with different actions, planned action availability, the queue.
Yeah, yeah,
it's just
you can do what you want if you've got the people.
So clever, yeah.
And you've only got the people depending on what you did last time or the round before.
You've got a whole technology board. So you can create your own little engine going on. You've got adventures that
breed
you can go
pirates.
On. You can breed pirates and turn them into mulch, which will create machines. Apparently, if you're Tom. What an amazing game. We'll get the full impressions. We'll stop there because I'll enthuse for ages, but I think we all enjoyed it.
Beautiful art.
Great artwork.
Absolutely love the art direction.
Just fantastic. Yeah.
He was a super nice chap.
What a lovely, lovely
Incredibly
man.
Incredibly genuinely enthusiastic about meeting anyone that cared to shout at him in a hall.
Yeah.
Yeah. First game, and he was like, yeah, this is my brainchild, right? This is his idea.
Yeah, I did ask him what's next, and he just kind of laughed and went... We'll see.
Possibly that might be it.
Nope.
One game.
He did mention, I guess this is an exclusive, that he does have expansions in mind if it does well.
I think it's done very well.
I imagine that
it was.
You'll get news on that from
real,
CG
real high up there in terms of pre Essen
anticipation. Yeah.
And I think they hopefully sold really, really well.
Absolutely.
It was literally the first thing I think we picked up.
First thing I bought, wasn't it? Absolutely. Yep. Brilliant. Should we move on to Portal games?
No.
Okay.
All right,
We could do Portal games. They launched 11 at the time, which was a rather heavy economic euro based on being a football manager. And they've actually launched that well in advance, obviously, like a lot of the other games here, but specifically in advance of the World Cup for people to buy stuff, which was quite interesting and quite nice.
It had loads of expansions.
It had a ton of stuff available.
Like five or six expansions, like new teams and extra stuff.
New
to
teams,
add in,
stadium stuff, extra.
I think
it
added like a
new mode.
I want to
solo
call it
campaign.
Like a PvP mode.
Yes,
where
PvP
you actively play games against other players rather than sort of playing
the
in
AI
parallel.
Teams, yeah.
Yeah, you play, AI sort teams of like you play matches in parallel previously. Yeah.
It looked fascinating. I eventually didn't pick it up because I needed to playtest it and the tables were slammed the entire weekend.
Constantly busy.
Yeah.
I assume it did well.
Yeah. I think it looked great, but as I thought at the time I first heard about it, not for me.
Not for you? Yep, that's fair. She did go through also Basilica with us, which is an area control two-player game, which looked brilliant. A very, very Euro.
Basilica did look very good, yeah.
Beautiful looking, very interesting looking area control game. Certainly worth a look. And also, and this is the reason why I can say this, they do have a press release on their website.
Okay.
So it's fine. And it's also, it also has its own BGG page now.
Oh, it does.
We can't talk about the mechanisms, but we can talk about it. And that is Thorgal. Thorgal?
Thorgal.
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 That, which looks...
Hurgle Gurgle.
Hurgle Gurgle. It looks and sounds freaking amazing, by the way. The artwork, it's based on a comic IP. I think it's a French comic book. And the art is wonderful.
It reminds me of Banner Saga, if you've played that game.
Yes, I have played that game, and it does remind me of that. You're right. It looks really, really interesting, and it seems to do some very unique things.
Every aspect of the game is a different layer of Tetronimo.
Yeah, does that in a very interesting
really
way.
Really cool, yeah.
Really, really interesting. So look out for that. That will be out at some point in the future.
Yeah,
but we don't know when.
Wildly prototyped. Wildly
it was definitely prototype. Yeah, we saw a reasonably early version.
Very early
of it,
version. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that being said, it's still like freaking great.
It's great. Yeah. And the mechanisms were definitely there. It was clearly developed and play tested and well on its way. It was on the way there.
It'll be refinement stages rather than development stages, I'd imagine.
I've got Chip Theory on here just briefly. We didn't get the chance to speak to them properly. We tried to, but Andrew was just far too busy having proper meetings. But the news
to deal with us, coasting in.
It happened a few times where we kind of just out of general interest spoke to people and they enthused, and then we went, can we get that like recorded? And they're like,
I've got a meeting with whoever.
But yeah, to have it even just for us to relay the information.
Yes, they are doing an Elder Scrolls game. And for Chip Theory to be doing that, I can't even imagine the quality level of this thing. Chip Theory, for anyone that doesn't know, makes ridiculous quality games where everything is neoprene and custom dice, and their sort of
unique selling point, if you like, is giant neoprene mats instead of boards. Yeah.
Metal core poker chips. Yeah, for everything.
And that's it. They don't do miniatures. Yeah, they do custom dice, neoprene mats, and metal core poker chips, which on the surface you think actually that's super, super high premium. Clearly that's really expensive stuff. And then actually when you think about it, it's quite a clever business model, because they always do the same thing.
Yeah.
And they are nice premium components, but they probably only come from two or three different suppliers.
Yeah, the economies of scale are probably all right.
Yeah.
But at least from our discussions, it seemed like they don't make a huge amount of money depending on the game. I think it was about £30 or £40 a game that they make in terms of profit, which is interesting.
There's not much margin in some of these things. No. Yeah.
It's why, and they certainly can't bloody ship them, because the weight of them. Staggering.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
you wouldn't find enough people to bother with the admin of the shipping.
No,
people would pay it, but not enough people would pay it.
No, it's direct sales all the way for them. I mean, it has to be through places like this, Kickstarter, GameFound, etc. That's where they find their market most likely.
I would love to have tried some of their games, but they didn't have any play tables set up. They had some sort of like demo tables to show people and talk through it, but not to play.
Yeah, so they've got things like Burn Cycle, Cloud Spire, Too Many Bones, and they're all incredible looking. So to know their pedigree and then see one of my favorite licenses, The Elder Scrolls, you go, oh damn, that's going to be amazing.
It will be.
They made a big deal of sort of highlighting that it's not Skyrim. You know, Modiphius are doing a Skyrim game, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not Skyrim. It's Elder Scrolls. All of Tamriel.
Yeah. Huge scope there. Yeah.
Let's move on to Mighty Boards and Cards, because we playtested two of their games. We did Vengeance Roll and Fight. Which
what a giggle.
That was a giggle.
That was Hotline Miami and John Wick and a roll and write all in one.
Simultaneous dice rolling, like in something like Project Elite, but competitive. So if
From a shared pool of dice is the thing. You're not just rolling dice live, you're doing it and stealing them from people.
Can you roll and steal the dice faster than everyone else can? And then it's the resolution phase is everyone just infusing their own particular action sequence with no real interaction with other people. Just enjoying yourself in the background.
I'm going to do this. And there's
no doubt they needed bigger tables.
The tables are tiny.
So I have no idea.
Can I roll these dice? No, those dice were already claimed.
Yeah, I don't know if they were ready for taking, or if that was Wayne's punch or Anthony's dash move.
I don't know. Yeah, I was just like just grabbing dice. I was like, oh, they're yours. Sorry. But that was very fun.
Mm.
And then we also got the chance to play Hamlet, which is also Mighty Boards.
Love
and Hamlet.
It was really good.
Bloody good, that.
Yeah.
Really think it was
not
one of the,
bad, eh?
Yeah, not bad. It's one of the most anticipated games pre-event. And I can see why. Very thinky, puzzly tile layer.
Mm.
Almost like a, I suppose, supply chain.
It's a real solid euro. There's not much in there in terms of sort of randomization. Only the order in which tiles come out to be available.
It's great.
It's resource management, but resource you have no permanent control over the resource. So
it reminded me of Scythe. You know, the resources are on the board. Everyone has access to them. Except you've got no soldiers to
They're at least
them.
In your possession when they're in your tile. This is just
at best you've got you make a picket line of donkeys. Right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
How about some flowers?
Not only just a chance to play, this was a purchase.
Yes. So Tom bought that.
Tom and I played again on Monday with Nick and Kerin and got our asses whooped.
Yeah, we did.
Did you really?
You explained it too well, Tom.
I explained it too. Yeah, Kerin kicked the crap out of us. Yeah.
He's too good at board games, that's the problem.
Stop him very, very well deserved.
The man is a savant. Great game, really, really good, and absolutely, certainly worth the hype. And what a lovely production for the base RRP. Mm. We saw so many games that were about the same or more expensive that didn't have anywhere near the loveliest production.
I think Simon had one valid complaint, which is that everything's slightly too small.
It is tiny,
It's great, you know, it doesn't take up a huge amount of space on the table. You don't need a massive amount of space.
But the icons
stuff's real nice, premium quality, all the meeples are screen printed and everything. But everything's about sort of 30% too small.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to read.
Everything could just be blown up and it would be much... And I've got near perfect vision and I was struggling to see it from... Because by the nature of the game, you can't crowd around it because the town slowly sprawls, but... No. Yeah, kind of like, and particularly when late game, you're building the church, you've got all your meeples out, and there's four players. That's a lot of extra tokens. And like, ooh, I can't actually see the resources on the tile because this is so cramped. Yeah. But great game.
Moving on, should we talk about Days of Wonder? And they were all about their big release, which was
20 tables.
20 tables.
All playing Heat.
That was Heat, pedal to the metal. And it's a lavish, beautiful production, I think. It's
super
gorgeous. Vincent Dutre's artwork, always amazing, especially so here. And every single one of those 20 tables was rammed at all times. And this thing plays like six players a go. So, like,
Tom and I were getting badgered from a hall away by Wayne, who'd secured a table. Like, we can't get there any quicker.
Get here now.
Get here now.
I'm literally at the far end of the exposition.
You couldn't be any further away when I text you.
there were probably somewhere in the region of 20,000 people between us.
This was a really fun hand management style game, speed management game, I guess. Trying to push your car to the limit, hence the subtitle of the game. Mm-hmm. Using heat cards or discarding heat cards to try and, you know, really control your car when it's screaming around
trying to avoid pulling all of the heat cards into your deck, right?
But also you need to take a risk sometimes.
Yeah,
right?
So you sort of had to manage siphoning them in and out of your main decks.
I was far too cautionary to start with and you guys were flying ahead like, sod it, all the heat.
Let's go as fast as possible.
Absolutely. A brilliant game, I thought. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. Anthony picked up a copy
of that. I'm really looking forward to trying the advanced mode.
Oh, so yes.
The basic game was relatively simple.
Generous in the box, though. It comes with four maps, a basic mode, which we played, the learn-to-play mode, I guess, and then like a few modules that you can pull out to make the game more complex. They have like weather systems and crowd and other stuff that was going to be interesting. A championship mode. Really fascinating. So... good one, I think, and it sold out pretty much immediately.
Yeah, I think you could play it kind of arcadey in the basic mode, and I think there's going to be a lot of clever choices to be made in a more in-depth game.
We'll briefly touch on Fantasy Flight, because their big thing was Twilight Inscription.
Yeah, we didn't stop for long.
We had a little round or two, and I wasn't convinced on the whole game. So
It was definitely pared down. They left half the stuff in the box on purpose.
It's big.
It was set up to only really play the learn to play piece, which was very straightforward. But I want to be honest. It's not really a roll and write. It's a 2 hour game. It's a heavy 2 hour game.
Massive game. Incredibly detailed. Very thinky. Lots of iconography that just happens to have the option to write on the board.
Yep.
It was interesting. There was a couple of people we spoke to that said, if you like Twilight Imperium, you probably won't like Twilight Inscription.
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair.
Because it doesn't really bear much resemblance to Twilight Imperium, except a little bit of shared iconography and theme.
It's far too abstracted for that, I think. It's a lot of... For me, it was a bit of a disappointment, to be fair. I mean, maybe with a proper teach and stuff like that, I'd give it another go.
I'd be interested to give it a try, but I don't think it would be something I would pick up.
Agreed. And then we got to play test Airmail, which is a very, very clever Euro. It's a competitive, I suppose... air delivery
that's
Euro.
It. Yeah. Right?
And that's basically
building an airmail delivery service across the US, right?
United States. Beautiful production, I thought. Very subtle, but lovely.
Loads of tiny planes.
It reminded us instant Pan Am comparisons.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Not in a bad way at all.
No, in a good way.
Lots of little colour plastic planes and then this lovely kind of 1940s, 1950s looking, almost sepia toned. interesting action cards, I suppose you call them.
Domino
cards.
Well, that's what our instructor referred to them as.
Well, they were. It was color matching. You match two halves of your domino cards. It gives you a color then, and then you do an work action in the corresponding colored region.
Yeah, I thought it was a fascinating design. Absolutely brilliant.
Really quite clever little game mechanics in there. Lots of options in what you could do, even if it felt limited at times.
Yeah. Sold out again. And in retrospect, maybe I should have picked it up. But at the same time, I think I said to you, Simon, afterwards, it would compete for space with Pan Am.
Very much felt like a competitor for a game you already have.
Yeah.
So, if I see it at a good price, I might well pick it up myself. It wasn't one that I felt compelled to pick up at the time. I'd definitely play it again.
Yeah, I thought it was excellent, actually. Mm-hmm. Very, very clever. And I can certainly see it being very cutthroat with some experience.
Yeah.
Right, just popping your planes in the middle of people's routes and stuff.
Just pay me a tax.
Yeah, pay me a tax. Every time you complete your route, I'll take a tax. Very smart.
And a lovely lady who gave us the instruction on how to play, almost to a fault, because she went into every detail of sub options that we wouldn't even hit on the playtest. But told us a fantastic story about how she effectively got gifted a signed copy of
Weather Machine.
Weather Machine by Vital Lacerda.
Incredible.
Yeah, she's like Vital Lacerda's biggest fan, it seems like. And what a lovely, lovely thing to happen as well. It was beautiful. All right. I think that's over the publishers that we saw at all of the stuff we played.
We talked to a bunch of other people, but I think those were the big ones, right?
Tom and I spoke to Chris, who did the Cursed Empire game.
He's
He'd made this enormous, wide-ranging,
gigantic,
RPG game.
Sprawling,
from which he's now extracted a card game, which Tom bought a starter set of.
I haven't had a chance to try it yet.
Yeah,
so it sounded really interesting. It started as a role-playing game setting, then a role-playing system that he'd built for the setting
into something like a 2,000
which he'd been,
page
which
book,
he'd been playing say. Over the course he'd been playing in various iterations for 30 years or something, all of it sort of just come from his imagination. And then he's turned it into a card game, which is sort of a bit of a break the mold from your standard sort of fantasy themed dueling card game, because it played in several different ways. And even just sort of straight out of the box, it was you could play direct competition with someone, or you could play cooperatively, and you could use the same set of cards to almost build your own scenario with a branching sort of series of choices that you can make on quests.
Story cards and player cards and beast cards. And someone could almost act like a games master and run a scenario using these cards.
You build a storyline and then you have an adventuring party and you sort of like play through it like a mini RPG.
Nice.
It just sounded really interesting. And it was the art that sort of caught us when we were sort of wandering by, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were doing signed art pieces, and we saw the artist just next to Chris. I don't know if he actually signed your copy in the end.
I can't remember. I'll have to have a look.
But yeah, these lovely high fantasy piece of artwork drew our eye, and then the guy went, "Oh, the designer and the artist there, do you want to have a word? And I, sure.
Yeah,
and we sat down, a much needed sit down, as we said, there weren't that many seats.
Exactly, take every opportunity.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. I think Anthony from MTVB Podcast was with us all weekend. Had a great time. He met Asger and Daniel, who were the designer and artist of Heat.
Yes.
So he got his copy signed by them, which was really cool.
Yep.
Personally, I had a very quick chat with Yarek from Archon Studio, the CEO there. It's great to just see him wandering around, filling up his shelves and demonstrating his bits. So they're the makers of the Dungeons & Lasers terrain. So I got a sneak peek at some of their newest product that's not out yet. The Kickstarter is due to deliver, sounding like much earlier than planned. They said May. It might be the end of this year. So that's going to be cool.
Nice.
That's
unusual.
It's a quick turnaround, right?
They are at a level now where they are just able to create stuff because it's all in-house. They're not relying on any, and that's I watched the AMA earlier on YouTube, and that's what he's aiming for.
That's a big boon.
Don't rely on anyone.
Just do it yourself.
Everything is me or it doesn't happen, pretty much.
So I was gonna I know I'm going all the way back to the beginning, but Joyride, something we forgot to mention, is they are planning to manufacture it all in Europe.
That's a good point. So, the turnaround there...
Hopefully, should be quite quick.
But actually, you're triggering a memory now. They're intending to fulfill the same year as the Kickstarter, which is a quick turnaround.
That's sort of inside of 9 months.
Yeah. That's rapid.
I think that's how it should be, really.
Should be, but not always.
The Archon were also demonstrating they had loads of Battleground, which is their Master of the Universe skirmish game, so you can sit and play that. They also had an advanced copy of their Fields of Eternia, which is a much larger game within that same license. So that's pretty cool.
Very good.
Anyone else? Speak to anyone else of note? I had a very quick chat with Chris, who's one of the guys from Wormwood. He's their convention manager. I was like, I know you from YouTube. I'm going to be a nerd. But they don't mind. It's good fun. Super high quality product. So nice to get to stroke the table.
We spoke very briefly to a couple of guys from Dice Town.
We did, yeah. Mike DeLizio, who's the loveliest man.
He's super friendly, wasn't he?
What a nice guy.
Because imagine he's just being inundated all day for nine hours with...
absolutely.
Hello.
Yeah, but he's still my... I think probably my favourite member of the Dice now. He's a very, very, very nice guy.
You got near to Tom Vassell. I took a ticket from him.
Exactly. Said hello, said a couple of words, said thanks very much. A little meeting of the minds. So, Simon, what was your game of the show?
It's tempting to say The Wolves, but I don't think I played it enough to be able to say that. I think for me, Starship Captains, quite genuinely. Between that, we haven't mentioned Lacrimosa at all. I saw such little
we'll
of it.
We'll come to it. We'll come to it, dude.
I couldn't really mention it. See, I think because it was his first game and it seemed to be... It had such an imprint on the show. You couldn't not have seen Starship Captains. Whereas some of the stuff... I went looking for Revive. It literally took me to Sunday afternoon to find it.
Yeah.
You could not miss Starship Captains.
Loads of people carrying around a copy of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
They all had branded t-shirts. You couldn't miss it. And I think it did fantastically well. So I'm super happy to say, for me, Starship Captains.
Tom?
Honourable mention for Starship Captains, for sure. Other than that, honestly, I had such a good time playing the Fox Experiment.
It was great.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
I would love to play it again.
Yep. That could almost be the game of the show for me, actually, the Fox Experiment. I had such a great time with it. The Starship Captains will probably be it for me as well. I think it's such a great game. We played it. We played it, and it was amazing. And it was everything I thought it would be and more. Mm. I only got a convention teach and play at UKGE, which is fine, but you don't really understand it. You're kind of just doing what you can. Understanding the game makes me want to play it over and over again.
Yeah,
like definitely. It is really, really excellent. But
you'll get a different game every time for so many times that you play it until you're like, I've seen this before.
Definitely. And then close to that is probably the Fox Experiment, although we were speed playing and probably doing it wrong. And then a very, very close to that was Hamlet, because I enjoyed the hell out of that. I thought that was actually brilliant.
Yeah.
Hamlet and Heat.
Yeah.
We'll go into it. They'll get a whole episode each, so
absolutely.
We'll whack lyrical at later dates.
Yeah. Which hall was your favourite?
Oh, behave.
Did you have a favourite hall?
Really liked wandering around Hall 5 with all the little like indie publishers.
I liked Hall 5.
They were like half of Hall 5, narrow little lanes with tiny little developers with their one prototype copy of the game.
Yeah.
There was some super interesting stuff in there.
I actually quite liked... It was either Hall 1 or Hall 2, the one with Heat and Days of Wonder and all that. It was just lots of big stuff in there.
That was Hall 1.
Hall 1.
Quite liked that. I think it had CGE as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that was quite an interesting one. And Pandas? No, Pantsaurus was...
Pantsaurus was 2.
2. 1 and 2 were next to each other directly, and that was...
Yeah, we fed through 1 into 2.
Yeah. Any particular highlight of the show for you, other than games?
I got cheesy pretzels, Tom.
The cheesy pretzels are
bang. So much fucking sausage.
We ate a lot of sausage.
So much sausage.
A sausage a day keeps the doctor.
It was more like about 5 sausages a day.
On your pay? I don't know.
If I didn't already know your rampant meat consumption, I'd have been surprised. But
protein boys.
I think just the ability to see so much stuff and then talk to the people who made it and buy a copy and get it signed, or in Anthony's case...
Yeah, that's a good point. Loads of people, you go, you buy a copy, and then the first person you talk to or you buy the game from, they go, oh, by the way, this is my game. Yeah. And you're like, brilliant. And they're like, do you want me to sign it? I'm like, yes, absolutely, go ahead.
That's basically a segue into... I'm sorry, Simon.
No, I was going to say, I think we all ended up with a signed copy of something at least. And I was going to mention Anthony's personalized artwork from Weberson Santiago, who did the artwork for The Great Split,
which looks fantastic, by the way.
Mind-blowing. And you know, most places you'd struggle to get signature, and Ant was saying at something like Comic-Con you'd pay someone 20 bucks to get a signed photo. These people are just sat at their table going, do you like my thing, do you want me to sign it, just because they're so enthused about it. I think it's just amazing.
The biggest highlight for me was that immediate access to the people that make the games. It's such a unique thing. We talked about it in the preview, but like you said, you can't really do that in films and in music. If you've got films and music you love, it's rare that you're going to go and meet the stars, the directors, you know, the guitarists, the songwriters, etc. But in board gaming, you go to Spiel, the guy that makes it will talk to you, will spend 5 minutes, will sign your stuff, and then just wander around and do that the whole weekend.
Explain how his game works. I saw the guy who made Yak, I can't remember his name, just there demoing his game because he can.
Moving briefly on, who do you think won this weekend from a publisher's perspective? Who won Spiel? Who are you most impressed by in terms of their releases and their presence?
Czech made an impression.
CGE did pretty well.
CGE definitely did really well. I would like to say the Devil as well.
They had some big games.
I would like to say Pandasaurus because they were sold out, but I think a big part of that was just they were sold out because they couldn't get the stock.
Given, as we've said, their geographical restrictions, I think Pandasaurus did a great job. Asmodee always feels a bit weird to say because they are such a conglomerate of retail house and publisher now. It was nice to see Pegasus Spiel be more than half of a booth. We knew they were going to be there.
tiny little stand.
Tiny little stand in the UK, and there's like half a hall, like the biggest hall. That was great.
I don't know if I could pick a winner in that regard, honestly. As Tom said, halls 5 and 6, where you got the indies doing fantastic
there
work.
There were dozens of really interesting projects.
Yeah, really fascinating stuff. I genuinely think CGE did great because they launched two very hot games and their presence was great, and they had signings regularly through the weekend in specific places. Mm-hmm. They just did a great job, I think. Yeah. I mean, for me, they were really good. Did you get everything you wanted?
I picked up a copy of Oak,
which
I'd seen in pre-release and looked great. Looks even better in person. Got that signed by a designer and artist. Super happy about that. My only other major purchase was a game called Fuji.
Yes.
Designed by Wolfgang Warsch.
Yeah.
Design artwork by the aforementioned Webson Santiago. So I now also own a copy of a game that I've met the artist of.
Yeah,
so that's pretty cool. Picked up a few D&D bits because it's D&D and WizKids were there. How am I? Mm-hmm. I didn't buy any of the giant 300-pound boxes of all the bits. I just bought a few more.
A little like acrylic Yeti or something, isn't it?
I did, yeah. That was quite cool. A freebie with the purchase, which is kind of fun. One of their flat stands.
Yeah. I picked up 3 games, and that is it. I was very, very...
It feels like you bought more, but it's just because they're all so big.
Well, one of them weighed about 20 kilos.
Well, exactly. And, I missed out on at least one, if not two, just because sales. But I picked up Human Punishment at the beginning, which we're going to play tonight after this recording, which is a crazy cyberpunk adventure.
I'm scared already, honestly.
BS, social deduction nonsense game. I also got Endless Winter, which is a very anticipated game.
Looking forward to trying that.
Yeah, phenomenal production, looks amazing. And I also picked up Starship Captains.
Hey.
Hamlet, Tindire.
Which looks great.
Which I'm really keen to try.
Vengeance Roll and Fight.
Vengeance Roll and Fight.
I think that was it, just the three.
And
you bought Cursed Empire.
Cursed Empire. The name had gone out of my head already. Yeah, there we go. And Cursed Empire. That was it. Those four.
Again, it feels like you bought more. Maybe it's all of Anthony's purchases.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I missed out on Lacrimosa. I was dead keen to try that.
I would have liked to give it a try. I'm not sure it was necessarily something I would have bought.
I might have bought that. The production looked freaking insane, by the way. Really cool. Beautiful. So kind of missed out on that, sadly. And I think we know everyone missed out on the Wolves. Everyone at the show missed out on the Wolves.
Yeah, it sounded like they had 200 or fewer copies there. So Wolves and Skates. Wild Style.
Yeah, Wolves and Wild Style.
Having played Wild Style,
Wild Style would have been great fun.
If it's €35 or less, I'd have probably grabbed it.
Grab that quickly, It was great.
As I said, it took me forever to find Revive. It looked great. It was sold out immediately.
Yeah, it looked amazing. You're 100% right. That was another one that might have been a purchase, actually.
And Turing Machine, having seen it in person, watched someone.
Were they even selling copies of it?
I couldn't see.
They were. I asked the lady that was demoing it for a few people. Like, do you have it? It's like, we did. It's gone.
It's gone.
Very limited copies. I think.
I don't think we saw it until the Sunday.
We didn't find. Well, there was three or four games I just didn't find. I didn't see. Right, they were on my kind of anticipated. I want to see.
There were definitely a couple. There were a couple that I was sort of looking out for, but just never came across.
Yeah, right, I saw a singular demo table with Wingspan Asia, which is out in November. It had a price on it, so it looked like there may have been a few preview copies for sale.
Possibly, yeah.
I don't know that for sure. So general release, pre-orders for November, and I think general release December for that one.
Okay, anything burning you guys want to mention before we wrap this bad boy up?
I wouldn't say burning, no. Just if you're listening to this sounding like it's something you'd enjoy, get looking at apartments.
Look now. Right?
Reserve in advance because they're already mostly reserved. Right?
Well, let's finish with this, Simon. Give us your top tip for someone wanting to go to Spiel. What advice would you give them?
It runs from the Thursday. I feel like we've missed out by not going to the show on the Thursday.
Agreed. Yep.
So definitely worth booking if you do regular day shift like we do. It's worth booking 2 to 3 days off, maybe traveling on the Wednesday or very early Thursday and straight to the show. But that depends on your outlook of early starts. Find somewhere that's got somewhere you can play the games you buy, because by at least this year's experience, you won't be able to sit and play at the show.
Yes.
So stay somewhere with a reasonable table. I don't know if there are many surrounding hotels, because obviously at NEC there's
probably
the Hilton next door, and that's well known.
We got an Airbnb
having spaces,
but why not? It would have been slightly cheaper than getting one of the hotels anyway. So great advice, Tom.
I think in the same vein, we've already talked about this, but if you're gonna go for the whole thing, probably not worth making a huge effort to get in on the Saturday, because
the Saturday was by slammed
far and away the
absolutely
most busy day.
Slammed. Yeah,
but if you do the Wednesday, if you do the Thursday, Friday, you've got plenty of time to do your retail opportunities on the slightly quieter days. Get in early, get the stuff that might sell out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, agreed.
You can do Saturday. You can sit on your ass, play some games at home or whatever. Go sightseeing. It's probably not worth trying to jam yourself in with all the other people, and then come back on the Sunday when it's much quieter and you can
do
probably
more playtesting. Yeah.
Yeah, you can probably find a bunch of stuff that you didn't get a chance to play, particularly the stuff maybe that's not available anyway.
Yeah.
Go and play it.
Go play test it. Anything that you thought, I won't buy that, but I'd like to try it.
Yeah.
That's the Sunday.
Yeah.
That's definitely. The tip from me, take a bit of cash with you. Because some publishers just won't take cards, especially the smaller ones, or which was surprising.
The indie retailers who just had... There's a load of people with just old games.
Yeah.
Like attics worth of old games they were flogging.
And there was folks that were just maybe, I think, especially from Human Punishment at the beginning, one of the games that I picked up, it's a independent, kick-started game. They don't have a retail presence, so you come with cash or you don't buy the game. So... if you're looking, and that was also the case for a couple of others, which surprised me. Endless Winter being another one.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So,
just a few places that didn't.
So take a bit of cash, just in case, the one that you want. If you're there.
There is a cash point, but good luck finding it.
Good luck finding it. Take cash before you go. Yeah, exactly. If there's one burning game that you desperately want and you think maybe it's not a mainstream game, take cash just in case.
Yeah. The app, I think, was great, worth mentioning. Oh,
definitely. Download the app.
Absolute godsend.
Interactive map. You can click on a hall and see what's there. You can also search for name of game or name of publisher, and it'll tell you where they are
It'll also tell you where you are in relation to the thing you're looking for, which was really smart.
It's almost like a little Google Maps.
It's really,
it's like,
really
clever. If you want to find this particular developer, they're over there.
Really, really clever. Mm. We'll wrap it up there. I mean, there is a ton we could speak for hours. Yeah. I'm not even kidding.
Nah, let's stop there.
But let's stop there. We've got games to play, frankly.
we can do some, we played, talk about individual games in more detail.
Which we will.
We've got some games to play. We're going to go and play a game now.
Exactly. Let's go do that. Thanks for listening to Bored Stupid. Subscribe to us for updates to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us anywhere, really. Just search Bored Stupid, spelled B-O-A-R-D. normally Sticker UK on the end if you're looking for us on Instagram or Facebook, or at our home, anchor.fm/boardstupid. If you like our content, please just interact with us, write a comment, ask us a question, whatever you like.
Reach out and touch us.
Reach out and touch us. We like to be touched, especially me. If you've got any feedback, comments or questions, stick it in the comments. We always love hearing from you. Our next stop is UKG 2023. We'll see you there. Until then, keep listening, keep playing games, keep loving life. Bye-bye.
Danke schön, Bert. The fridge full of beers and pop was fantastisch.
Bert, what a guy. Danke. What a guy.